Hello and welcome to the Monday, July 14th, 2014 edition of the Sands and Storm Centers Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and today I'm recording from Stockholm, Germany. In Diaries, we got an interesting post from Rob about egress filtering. Usually when people talk about egress and ingress filtering, they're often talking about IP address filtering to prevent spoofing. Rob suggests to go a step further and to lock down traffic more granular, in particular on the egress side. Firewall configurations really too often only consider blocking inbound attacks, something they're actually not always that terribly useful for, because you will still have to allow traffic to reach public services, which really is what you want to protect, and most other ports are closed anyway. But the egress or outbound filtering can be very useful to disrupt command and control channels. It can also be helpful to identify compromised machines as a result, as they try to connect to rogue DNS servers, IRC servers, reverse shells, and, well, whatever the attacker is trying to use to get data out. Rob also mentions examples like QNAP network storage systems. These particular systems did configure file sharing services, for example, by default, and it was all too easy to overlook them. And with a tight firewall configuration, you not only disrupt, but you also detect this outbound traffic, and then, of course, can adjust the configuration of these systems. And security company TrapX found an interesting Trojan that apparently shipped as part of an inventory scanner. And actually, if you look at some of their write-up, it shows how, for example, egress filtering can help you identify malware like that. We have talked about systems before that came pre-installed with malware. We sometimes call them the certified pre-pwned systems. And in many of those cases, the infection was accidental, but in this case it appears to be more deliberate. The scanner itself is a handheld inventory scanner that runs the embedded version of Windows XP. The company who ordered these scanners received a total of 48, and 16 of the scanners turned out to be infected. Now, the malware installed on the scanner wasn't just something really simple, as we have seen in the accidental infections. Instead, it apparently went right after things like, for example, accounting systems. As soon as the scanner was connected to the company's Wi-Fi network, it then searched out for systems using SMB or file sharing, looked for specific host names commonly associated with these bookkeeping systems, and if it didn't find anything via SMB, then it just tried RAdmin or remote admin. Vulnerable internal machines were then made part of a botnet and subject to additional infections and data exfiltrations. Apparently, this particular Trojan went mostly after things like shipping records and such to get more intelligence about this particular company, what it shipped, how much it shipped, and essentially learn more about their business. So it went far beyond just exfiltrating the inventory data that the scanner would have seen just as part of being used as an inventory scanner. And over the last few months, a number of webmail services sprung up promising end-to-end encryption using JavaScript. This is a pretty neat way to accomplish encryption and decryption on the client versus on the server, but it also comes with some risks, most notably cross-site scripting. Webmail systems have been a rich source of cross-site scripting vulnerabilities in the past. I believe all the big ones like Hotmail, Gmail, and such had cross-site scripting vulnerabilities at some point, in part due to the complexities of parsing and rendering these email messages. The latest service to admit cross-site scripting vulnerability is Tutonata, joining more well-known systems like Lavabit, ProtonMail, and HashMail, which also were subject to cross-site scripting and various other sort of implementation issues. Like, usually with encryption, one of the critical things are these small details as you implement the system, not so much the larger architecture. And last week I mentioned a new bug in the widely used LCO encryption algorithm. Friday, an exploit was released to demonstrate the remote code execution using this bug in MPlayer 2, a popular Linux media player plugin, so definitely make sure that you patch. This is of course just one instance of this vulnerability, and the vulnerability itself exists in more or less anything that uses these old LCO or compression libraries, so definitely make sure that you patch quickly. Talking about plugins, Apple also released an update to OS X that will block execution of older known vulnerable versions of Flash on OS X. Apple has done so in the past, and this is just the latest update to this blacklist of known vulnerable plugins. And according to security company Malcovery, a new version of the Game Over Seuss bot has been cited. The malware appears to be based on the same source code as the still defunct former version of the Game Over Seuss bot, in that it used similar random number domain algorithms, and its command control infrastructure is also somewhat similar organized using these random domain names. And it also has a couple of anti-reverse engineering tricks, like, for example, it does detect virtualization. Also, it doesn't do anything for the first 10 minutes or so, which is a common time that many automated systems take to inspect a malware. The malware arrives as a zip file or a screensaver file as part of an email claiming to be sent by various banks. The one that Malcovery observed were emails claiming to originate from M&T Bank as well as NatWest, but we're likely going to see others as well. And well, this is it for today, so thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.